Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
The wonderful actor and comedian T.J. Miller joins us in the second half. T.J.'s got a lot of really interesting ideas. I would even say profound. So we'll really plumb the depths of T.J. Miller's psyche in a moment. First, I'll tell you about Tommy John. Gifting season here. Need the perfect gift for him or her? Tommy John. Revolutionary underwear, loungewear, and clothing that guarantees perfect fit. I'm wearing my Tommy John underwear right now. I'm also wearing my Tommy John t-shirt right now. It's breathable, wedgie-proof underwear, ridiculously soft. Loungewear, pajamas, guaranteed to fit perfectly. Treat yourself, people. Lightweight, breathable fabrics with multi-directional stretch. Their bras, their underwear, they fit any type of body. Tommy John eliminates the visible panty lines for the women. And they've created the horizontal quick draw fly for the fellas. So everyone's innovating and everyone is benefiting. Plus, you'll never get a wedgie. It's guaranteed. First, if your first pair isn't the best you've ever worn, you'll get your money back, but it is the best. It's Tommy John, right, Dawson?
Leave the jingling to the bells and give the gift of comfort this holiday with limited edition gifts like loungewear pajamas and underwear from Tommy John. Plus, save 20% on your first order when you visit TommyJohn.com/Adam. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off.
Hey, it's Adam Carolla. You may know him from putting his body on the line in Jackass, but now Johnny Knoxville is bringing you the wildest stories from the bravest folks he knows on his newest podcast, Pretty Sure I Can Fly. With his co-host, Elna Baker, they have incredible firsthand accounts from folks who surfed 100-foot waves, ride 600 miles per hour in a rocket sled, and wrestle crocodiles just for fun. They've been talking with brave souls who throw caution to the wind and push the boundaries of what humans are capable of. Or, as Johnny would say, they're talking to people who have more balls than a bowling alley. I'm Pretty Sure I Can Fly, Johnny and Elna bring you personal stories from unsung heroes that are part comedy, part adrenaline, and all heart. These are the inspirational, hold-my-beer stories that will make you want to grab the bull by the horns, literally and figuratively. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcast. You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly right now, early and free, right now on Wondery Plus.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from HDS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. It's time for month 7 of Adam's Monthly Nut. This month's shipment includes a recording of Adam breaking down Adam's 12 favorite songs of all time. A jar of coffee booster, perfect for filling you up in the AM so you don't eat the donuts that asshole brought into the office. Heavenly Kettle Corn, the most delicious kettle corn in the known universe. Seriously, we've eaten a concerning amount of it at the studio. A bottle of Mangria or 33 wine, and a custom silver Mangria flask for the aforementioned booze. This $60 value is yours for only $25. Sign up for 1 month or keep the shipments coming. So prep your mail's box and get ready for Adam's Monthly Nut. Hurry, we will sell out. It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, gang, I was talking to my sister, just got a brand new Tesla. And then I was talking to my buddy who can't afford a car. And it occurred to me, the perfect rich man, poor man. Zero emissions. Have a good one.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
That's a good one.
That's funny.
TJ Miller in studio. Bray Improv.
Nice to be back.
Tonight through Sunday, and we'll talk about his new movie coming out as well. Of course, Deadpool, Cloverfield, Crashing, Silicon Valley. So many great projects. Good to see you again, my friend.
Very fortunate. Good to see you guys also. And I might want to jump right into it because you just did the cooking section. Mm-hmm. So comics are selling merch on the road, and I was selling this sort of fake hip-hop, pop, folk album that I did a long time ago. And as a CD, which I thought was really funny because I would say on stage, and I don't know how you would play this. I have no idea who still has a CD player. But I kind of, you know, I got tired of that. And so I thought, what would be really funny to sell? And then I realized that I had become friends through this weird voiceover thing that I did with Doug Lynn and his family, the Lynns, who live in central Indiana, and they have a hot sauce company called the Scoville Brothers. Mm-hmm. And so I collaborated with him for a year and came up with my proprietary hot sauce.
Oh, my God.
Is that where the Scoville scale comes from, or is that a different thing?
No. They named it after the Scoville scale. And so we've got the Extreme Gangster Heat. We've got TJ's Choice Chipotle. We have a diet hot sauce over there, which is the same as the Chipotle, because no hot sauces have any calories at all. And then we have the fucking intense ghost pepper type shit with me on the label saying fuck shit. Yeah, and that's not something I can say on most radio programs.
Yeah. It's hard to promote.
It is hard to promote. So yeah, if you guys want to throw a little bit of this on...
there's more. I can always give you seconds.
Yeah, I'd love to. So it was fun because I worked with them, and I really liked what they were doing with Chipotle, but I wanted it to be a little hotter. Because I feel like Chipotle sauce isn't ever really hot enough.
It's just smoky.
Yeah, it's just more of a smoky thing. It's just like a sauce. And then I wanted something that was sort of in between, so we worked on finding something that was like if Tabasco gave a shit anymore, you know?
Yeah.
And so that's the Extreme Gangster Heat, and then the fucking intense ghost pepper type shit is just... that's for the people who that's what they're about. But my feeling with that was... because I love hot sauce. I'm very, very passionate about it. And I felt like sauces... and you did hot ones, right?
Yeah.
And so I did hot ones, and I felt like the last four hot sauces were just to be hot. That's it. It didn't matter what the flavor was. I actually like their hot sauce. But so I wanted to do a ghost pepper sauce that was really hot, but had some flavor to it, and that you could use sparingly and have a lot of heat but still get the flavor. And then if you want to just go fucking crazy and burn the inside of your body, then you can really slather it on. So I wanted to kind of do something for everyone, and that's nice at the show, because what I do is after the show, just with the VIP people, I actually will say, let's find out your flavor profile, and I'll recommend what the best hot sauce would be.
My thing is, let me sign your titties. But I guess that's different. It's just a different thing.
I take a Polaroid, but I take them just of the tits. You know what I mean?
How did you do on hot ones, and when did you find it uncomfortable?
It was a while ago, but I got all the way through. I got to the end, but I was standing up and sweating and needing to walk around. I mean, it was pretty intense, because those last couple are just hot, you know? And by the last one, you can't even feel your mouth.
You don't have, pardon the pun, intestinal fortitude like DJ Khaled.
Oh, yeah.
He gave up really quickly, right?
But he didn't quit.
This is dangerous.
Here's another one.
Here's another one.
He said, for all my fans out there, just because you give up doesn't mean you quit.
Quietly, my favorite part of that whole exchange.
Another one.
Is when...
not another one.
No more.
The host said, he's like, DJ... he's such a pompous ass. He's like, are you eating what I'm eating? It's like, yeah, Sean Evans. Sean Evans is like, yeah, we're eating the same thing. And he's like, you are? And Sean's like, you want to switch plates? And DJ Khaled's like, yeah, okay, yeah, I do. Like, what a pompous asshole.
Also, like the poisoning scene from Princess Bride.
Right.
Yes. He's like, I don't believe that. Switch them so I know.
Right.
And then he didn't even get through them. I really like that Louisiana style. That one right there, the pain is good. That one's good, has good flavor. But yeah, I made it all the way through, and they were joking that DJ Khaled didn't. But my favorite one of somebody who gets through
quit.
All of them.
He didn't quit.
He just wasn't able to complete the task, right. But he didn't quit.
No, he chose to not complete the task. Wait, I want to try. What one do I?
Chipotle, what do you want to recommend?
Which one do you want me to try first?
I mean,
let's go in order of heat. So start with the Chipotle and tell me what you think. And if you guys have a little bit of food, I would love to.
Yeah, I'm going
to
pour
get into
on
it also.
They can grab
people
some
get angry when I eat into the mic, so I'll work this out.
Yeah, you have to use
that much. And here, I'll open this one.
Give it to the guy.
My favorite Hot Ones guest who made it all the way through is Neil deGrasse Tyson. Did you see that one?
Oh, did we see that one?
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know. I feel like black folk have a cultural advantage.
There was something.
You're too white. You should be graded on
I think astrophysicists have some sort of propensity for it because he just did the whole interview talking about the universe, and only with one of them did he sort of touch his upper lip. That's it. And the whole rest of the time, he just is even keeled. It's pretty amazing.
How did you feel the next day on the way out? You know, people are like, yeah, but then what happens the next morning when you're on the pot? Like, how'd that work?
I was okay. I mean, I like hot sauce, and I eat a lot of it. So that was...
Let me give that one to Adam.
Yeah. And this is the intense. So go easy on that one. Otherwise, you're going to have a tough rest of the program.
Did you have an automobile-related topic to bring up or challenge as well?
Do you have a 2017 Ford GT?
No, I do not.
Okay, my father and I do.
Okay.
And so we did the whole rigmarole where we applied for the car.
Right.
And, see it. Adam likes it. You can find it on my website if you want to order it to come right to your house.
Yeah, very smoky, but got some zest
to it.
Got
a little bit
to
it. A little bit of kick.
And all right, first off, hold on. Let me hate my dad more than I already do. Okay.
There's
you
always
and your
time.
Dad. Me and my fucking
always
dad
time.
Wouldn't go in on a hamster cage. I can't fucking imagine going in with my dad on a 2000 Ford GT. And yes, you must put together a little manifesto on why it is you deserve to own that car.
And it has to include video. I mean, it was that involved. And I got some people to do... Because here's the thing. I've never really hated my dad, but I've come up short on a lot of things in his book.
Aww.
So I don't... he always wanted me to be a better athlete than I was. The only thing we really connected on was film. Was like watching movies all the time. He showed me the Thin Man series, every James Bond movie, every Woody Allen movie.
Father in?
He says he's a recovering litigator, but he was a lawyer and then is now an expert witness. So the law, he's a lawyer.
And where do you guys hail from?
Denver, Colorado.
Oh, okay. So did your dad had thoughts about what you were going to do after high school?
Yeah, I think he also wondered if maybe... Thank you. I think he wondered if maybe... I'll take the diet one if he doesn't got it.
But, like, he didn't have...
Sorry,
he didn't dream of you starring in a live-action Yogi Bear?
I think... No, I do not think that he dreamed that. I think that he was more interested... He was okay with whatever I did, but I think that he wanted me to do something a little bit less risky than comedy.
Right.
But he's a really funny guy. And so we also connected on with cars. I don't know every single thing about every model and when the taillights were changed on the Ford. You know, they're this different from the 57 to the 58.
Yeah.
But I did love racing. And so he took me to Bondurant School of Racing, which I don't know if you've done that, but it is real fun.
I did a racing school 4 years in a row, or maybe five.
Really?
I can't remember. But yeah, I've done a lot. I've done racing school.
Yeah, there's
Skip
Barber. There's a bunch of different ones. And so he took me to Bondurant really early on when I was 16 or 17. And I just loved it. And I understood in some ways it's weird. It's kind of like comedy. You just have to be so focused every moment. If you make a mistake, there's going to be real repercussions. So we started to connect on that. But he got an 05 GT.
He took you from Denver to Phoenix?
Yeah.
Okay. Now I hate my dad more because you guys boarded an airplane to go to a driving school together when you're in high school.
Okay. So it was so great. And such a good experience, and I understood it so much that he started taking me on these fall foliage tours because he was part of the Porsche club and he was a part of the
Ferrari
club.
The dad you never had.
But he was always interested, and he was really smart. I think I'm a little like this with watches, but he was really smart about buying a car that he could flip. Like, he had a Porsche 911 Turbo S, and so that he ended up using to buy the 2017 Ford GT, but he got an 05 GT, and he always drives these cars. He doesn't have a garage where he keeps them. Saying he's got one or two cars that he really likes to drive, and that was part of the application. So in the 2017 Ford GT application, you had to prove that you drove the cars. You didn't just garage them. You had to prove that you used them for charity work, which we did every fall foliage tour. We'd go to small towns and do kind of auction stuff, and you will drive you around in the mountains. And so we raised money for a lot of places in Colorado. And then you had to have, you had to do a video for why it was important to you. And I had some friends in Denver help edit something together for him, showing all those things. But then you also needed a social media following. And my father doesn't even have a website.
Finally, my son can help me out.
So he said, well, is there any way that you can, if we can co-apply or something like that, or you apply? And I actually, one of my agents, a great guy, this guy Christian Carino, he's really good friends with somebody at Ford. And I was able to have a conversation on the phone with that person and sort of lay out an even more this was such an important moment for me to say, this is why I have felt like I live in my father's shadow at times. This is how rarely we connected, but we do connect on. And you had to be a Ford family. I learned to drive in a Ford Explorer. The first car that I bought was a Ford Focus. He had this Ford GT 2005. So we actually were a Ford family. And I said, this would be the most important thing that I could do for my father. And he said, look, I'm not involved in it, but I'll put in a good word. And when the application, we waited and waited and waited, and we both applied, and he was rejected, and I got the car, and so he paid for it, and now both our names are on the title. But it's been 2 years, because I think you guys followed the John Cena stuff.
Sure.
We got the 36th car off the line, and so we were 36 in line to be able to sell the car, and now they've doubled in value, tripled in value. So they've almost become too expensive to drive. And so we're going to sell it. And Adam, I think you should be the first person to have an opportunity.
Oh, first refusal.
To buy it.
The opportunity.
Well, it's an opportunity. Let's to acquire it. It's previously owned. A couple of things. First
lightly
off,
used.
The 24-hour war, my documentary about Ford versus Ferrari at Le Mans out on Netflix today. So
you
people
see that and
check that out.
There's the Christian Bale film that's coming out also, so more people are aware of that. Yours is better, I'm sure.
I'm trying to think. Now,
it's a companion
I'd like to drill down on this. Like, first
it's a pilot
off,
fish.
The big deal for these cars is sort of color combos. What did you get in a heritage color? Did you get it in
we
Wimbledon?
We didn't get exactly
whatever
the heritage, but here's what we have. An 05 with the white and the blue racing stripe.
That's American racing, Shelby,
and
Ford.
And then the 2017 is blue with white stripes. So they're inverse twins.
Uh-huh. And now what I know about this market is they stickered for anywhere between like $515. Maybe you could get them up to like $675 or something like that.
I mean, its base price was $400,000.
Oh, was it four?
Yeah.
But what did you guys get it up to?
And then we got it up to, it was more than $500,000.
Okay.
But it's now worth twice that, more than twice that.
Yeah, so now there have been a couple that have changed hands.
Adam already bought John Cena's. So
I think one went for like $1.7 million, but it may have been some charity involved.
Well,
you know?
It was a charity auction, because we've been following this, and it is a so there's a charity component, but also it only had 8 miles on it. So that's the interesting thing I wanted to know in talking about this is, do you like to keep your cars at super low mileage? Do you like to get them out there? Ours is less than, 5,000 miles. It's not. But we drove it. We drove it on the track, and that was really incredible because the car is crazy. You can take it to a track mode. It goes down.
Right.
And it really moves. And you can go, Kate and I did Well, at one point we did like 215, and the car does not feel
really?
Like it's...
Where you were know, you?
We were on a racetrack in Denver, Colorado, at the Stapleton Racetrack.
Wow. That must have a long straightaway. That
yeah, it had a
ass.
Really long straightaway, but I was carrying in a lot of speed into the... I was sort of... You can carry that much speed. I was carrying in either 60 or 70, maybe 80 miles into the straightaway.
Yeah.
And so then I really was able to put... It goes... It gets there that fast. And part of that is you don't ease off of it because it's not going like this at 150 miles an hour. It's just right there.
Stuck.
Quiet.
Yeah. Well, the aero pushes it down even
exactly.
more. So it makes it that much more stable at that speed. All right. There's a couple of these cars coming up for sale in the next few months.
One from the Miller boys.
That's
that
right.
Much,
that's right.
That much,
the Miller boys.
That much I know. And I don't know, you know, now here's an interesting... So here's an interesting thought.
Please do.
The 05 version your dad bought new,
yes.
Those were like 150, 155,
yeah.
somewhere in that range. Those
exactly.
are like 275 to 325 now. They basically just doubled.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
They spiked a little. They flattened out over the last few years, but they've essentially doubled. But then they kind of stopped. Mm. And
yeah.
So the 05s, they got up to double or close to double. You know, fairly consistently, but for the last 4 or 5 years, they've just been kind of flat. So the question on something like this is, obviously, you buy it from Ford and you buy it for $550, awesome. You sell it for $1.2,
mm-hmm.
good for
great.
You. But then the person who buys it from $1.2, does it go to 2.4 or do we stay at 1.2 for a while? Because your dad's 05 has been around 3 for a few years.
I think
years.
It's probably going to stay. The other thing that he said was, you know, the more you drive it, the less it's going to lose value. But it's not going to lose a lot. And he said to me, he said, look, in 10, 20 years, this car is going to be worth, I think, still a lot of money, but I'm not necessarily going to be around for that. But if we do this...
You're talking about himself or you?
I think it was sort of the Miller boys.
Yeah, the
you know?
Collective we.
No, he said, you know, I'm 75. We don't have to sell a car if you don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew that he had... been so passionate about getting this car because he knew that it was going to double in value. He knew even more. And so that's kind of a nest egg for him to retire.
Oh. Mm.
So what I realized was when he said he wanted to sell it, I felt really bad. But then when he explained it more, I felt like maybe it wasn't the car that I needed to get him, but the ability to flip this car and then kind of make his way peacefully into retirement. So if you'll buy it, I can finally, I'll tell you what, I'll love your dad. You know what I mean?
Well, my dad's already living in the shadow of your dad, so.
Just by virtue of this conversation.
Yes, by virtue of the conversation.
I think the thing that I would do, if I could, and there were these two cars, I would get, I'm not in a financial position to do this, but I would get the 05 and the 2017 because they're kind of twins.
Yeah,
it's like a vertical wine tasting. You know, you want different years to compare.
Right. Yeah, and the 05 is really fun to drive. It's almost more fun because it's more muscle than race car.
Mm. A little more visceral.
Yeah, totally.
Cena's, he sold his at Mecum for 1.8. So he said, so there's a couple coming up, you know, because what you look for is comps. And that's kind of the price. And you can take them to auction, but if you take them to auction, you got to pay the VIG. And the person that's buying it has to pay the VIG, too, and they're backing that out.
Right.
So if you say this car is worth $1.5 million and you're paying a 10% premium as a bidder, when you get to 135, you stop because
you add
it in and you'll get to...
Right, you're going
to
end up paying.
You'll get to 1.5. So
you,
as the person who's selling the car that's worth 1.5, gets 135 because the person stopped. Mm. Because there's an element of that. If it's an auction.
We have a representative who's going to take 5%, but not from you, from us.
Right.
It's a finder's fee
for
finding the person that's buying it. But... first refusal from you.
What is the asking price?
Well, I think he's looking for what you said, which is 1.2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would hope that it would be 1.5, but we're directly selling it. It was the 36 off the line, so the 100th car is not going to be available for another how many months, you know, or years.
Yeah, I think 1.2 is a bargain for that car. My thing is, all the cars I have are race cars, and specifically Newman race cars.
So what I'm hearing is it's time for him to branch out.
Time to diversify.
Yeah. I happen to have like...
This is a fucking race car. You'll yeah. get in this thing, and it will give you some kind of erection. I can promise it'll be a good one. But it is really, it's really something that... I couldn't believe it. I've never driven anything like it, and I'll never drive anything like it again.
215 is insanely fast in a street-going automobile. Unfortunately, I will buy the hot sauce.
Hold on.
I like that.
TJ, let Adam and I talk for a second. Mm-hmm. Adam, come over here.
And the hot sauce is going for 1.2 also.
Oh, that's good to know. TJ wants to move this car. Mm-hmm. So you got the negotiating power here. Mm. TJ, you okay over there? Mm. Two words, Deadpool 3.
Deadpool 3.
You need a role.
Oh, I need a roll.
They need a villain.
Yeah.
I mean, you they do need a villain.
They need a bar back or something for Deadpool 3.
A bar back would be great. Then we get to work together intimately. That would be perfect. Yeah, you do have the leverage on that one. We can get you in Steven Spielberg's next film.
When
Might
is
be as a walk-on.
What's going on with Deadpool 3? Is that in the works?
You know, they don't have... They are doing X-Force. So Deadpool, the character, and Cable, I think, and some of the other characters... went and they're in X-Force, and mm-hmm. there's just now so many characters in that world that there wasn't kind of really room for me to do X-Force. And so because they're doing X-Force, they haven't decided if they want to do Deadpool 3. And to be honest, I almost would rather that they didn't. And here's why. Because The Hangover 2 was a lot of fun. The Hangover 3 felt like a cash grab. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of... Actually, Seinfeld was talking in Between Two Ferns. He was joking about this, which is, do you think that the Hangover 3 kind of ruined that franchise? That you had this movie that was one of the funniest movies of all time, but then when you did 2 and 3, it kind of became, you know, there's no Caddyshack 3,
right.
Sort of his point. And I think Deadpool 2, we knocked it out of the park. I really think it ended up being great.
It's a fun movie.
And I was worried about that. So what if Deadpool 3 is...
Doesn't live up.
Yeah, and then you just kind of look at the whole thing, and that's the one... Because I remember The Hangover, and I love that movie, but I also remember Hangover 3, and that was not a good movie, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it is it's one of those things. It's kind of sometimes like when an athlete hangs on too long, and you just know... You know them from the last couple of seasons where they weren't good, and that's kind of your memory of them.
What if Deadpool 3 is Michael Jordan playing baseball?
Oh,
that's right.
God,
it could very well be.
The Wizards.
Yeah, sorry.
That's what I was going to say.
But I know, I also like, I've been very fortunate now to, because people love these franchises. I mean, I hear that a lot. You know, what's going on with Deadpool 3? We want more Deadpool. And so I think they should be given that for sure. So I love being a part of those types of things, those franchises. But I'm much more interested in doing original properties, which is what Underwater is, the film that Kristen Stewart and I did that's coming out January 10th. And that's a thriller. I don't care about, like, my acting. I don't want to tell people, like, I'm also a dramatic actor. I can do drama. That's not important. But I do like being the funny character in a different type of film, like Ready Player One, which was sort of an epic Steven Spielberg blockbuster. Mm-hmm. So Underwater and projects like that, I get really excited about. I, of course, if they want me to do Deadpool 3, I'm going to. I'm under contract.
I'm going to flip the script, and I don't know why that made me think. But years ago when I was doing Dancing with the Stars, and we're sitting in a limousine, and there's two separate limos, and we're taking them to Oprah's studio to like unveil the cast of Dancing with the Stars, and I was sitting in one.
That was back when it was not what it is now.
That's right.
It was very cool.
It was a little embarrassing, but not.
It was very Hangover One.
It was
at that point.
So we're driving there, and I made this joke. Well, I said, like, everyone's like, who's going to win? Who's going to win this thing? And I was like, Christy Yamaguchi's going to win this. She was in the other limo. I was like, she's going to win? Of course she's going to win. She's an Olympic caliber ice dancer. Who wouldn't? Why wouldn't
she's a natural
she
athlete.
It's a little
this?
Bit easier to dance
right.
on the floor than on ice. So yeah. I think she'll end up doing well.
And they said, and then, like, people, like, chimed in. They're like, well, she's used to dancing on ice. This is hardwood. I said, it's like... I said, exactly. It's like saying you can juggle on carpet, but you could do it on a unicycle, but could you juggle on carpet?
Yeah,
it's like,
no.
Yes, yes. If I could juggle on a unicycle, I could definitely do it on a carpet. I would be better. Yeah, so I said, exactly right. Christy Yamaguchi's going to win this bitch. And then I said, but there's one shot. We got one shot here, people. And everyone like leaned in and I said, she's Japanese and those people are notoriously lazy. And everyone looked at me like, for a second, like, what the fuck? Worry, and then they all laughed. And I said, you're all racist for laughing. But
you've driven TJ to tears.
She beat the shit out of everybody. She was the only one I've ever seen who was actually better than her. She was better than her partner yeah. was.
She was like, get it together.
So I knew that was going on.
I mean, you're talking about juggling also. At the Brea show, you'll see what I'm doing now. Because I've been touring for 2 years, and I've done every single weekend except for the last month and a half. I went to... It's hot, isn't it?
TJ, yeah, he's riven to tears for this whole conversation.
I'm loving it.
The hot sauce is excellent, by the way.
Yeah, I'm going
to
get a little.
Thank you so much.
I'm going to put on a little air for TJ.
I had a thought that I needed to... That I will finish hotter. when you're done. I screwed up my thought, which is TJ's doing dramatic acting and underwater. I saw an extended trailer of it. It looks great. I love
it.
Anything
right?
at sea. The effects are amazing. It's shot amazingly. And they always do the same. It's like, well, he's a comedic guy, but can he do the dramatic stuff? You know what? It should be asked the other way around.
Right.
All
be.
The comedic guys can do the dramatic stuff. It's easy for them. Ray Romano slides right into the dramatic stuff.
True.
No problem. Because it's harder. The real question is can the dramatic guys do the comedy, yes. not the other way around?
How many times have Vin Diesel done
the pacifier, and it's like, that doesn't quite fit. You
how
know?
Many times have we been surprised? They're like, oh, that comedic actor did so great in that dramatic role, and yet we're never surprised, we're never expressed the same surprise
right.
when the dramatic actor bombs in the comedic
role.
Well,
that's the Charlie Chaplin quote from how many millions of years ago? Anyone can make him cry, it takes a genius to make him laugh, and yet we've ignored that for how many decades?
Right, so, sorry, I had to taste this sriracha there, but... Underwater's the name of that movie. That's January 10th, and of course...
Yeah, we're excited about it. It's going to be great. And I've also, because I've been touring every single weekend for basically 2 years, I took a break to go... Kate, my wife, is a sort of amazing installation artist and internationally known, and so she did a festival in France, so I went there, and that was weird. Because I know you've taken breaks from doing stand-up, but 5 weeks is the longest amount of time I've ever gone without performing. And I did do one show in Paris, and that was really successful, but I had to slow down my timing because they don't speak... They understand English more than they speak it, but it was really funny. I was kind of having to make the jokes like this, and you know, I was also acting things out. It was really weird. I was like, do you ever wake up? Like, wake up, and you kind of... So that didn't feel like a real... That didn't feel like a real, you know, show, really. But outside of that, I've been kind of doing every weekend, and that's sort of fun to talk about underwater. And every... When I do media for stand-up, you know, I get to say to people, like, this is going to be a different type of film. That's something that I think is really fun, because people are kind of like, well, what is the next film project? What's the next? But what I wanted to ask you, what's the longest you've gone without doing stand-up? Because you're doing a lot more now. I just did the Tumblr Brewing Company, and you had done something there.
Yeah.
25 years?
Mm-hmm.
I'd gone long, long, many, many years. I'd never gone any... time period without talking on the radio for 2 hours a night or 4 hours a morning or whatever. So I was like a guy who was going to the gym but not playing a sport, you know. I was like in shape for thinking and talking, but I wasn't in stand-up. I wasn't
right.
like stand-up shape. I was just always kind of lean and mean because I always just had a job where there was no commercials, or there's a couple commercials, but there's no songs or breaks or anything. It was just like talk, talk, talk. And then this year, and then I did a lot of colleges with Dr. Drew back in the day, but that wasn't really stand-up, but it started to kind of turn into a little bit of a stand-up thing. And then I started going out on my own, but that was sort of like a one-man show. And then this year, I really started just focusing on like straight stand-up. So my New Year's resolution was to just go out and do stand-up.
Yeah, which I think is great because people want to see you do that medium of comedy also. I guess then the question should have been, what's the longest you've gone without being on the radio? or in front of a microphone in this sort of
14 minutes?
I
went from...
Yeah,
you
he
know,
keeps doing this after
before
the show ends.
No,
he most definitely does.
So I got into it on Kevin and Bean, you know, 25 years ago. It was like once a week, twice a week, you know, all that kind of stuff. But since I got my first job on Loveline, I guess that would have been 96, 95, 96, somewhere in there. Since I got that first job...
I mean,
that,
a week or two of vacation, you know what I mean? It's probably the longest stretch.
Yeah, that went straight through to doing mornings. There was a little hiatus between that and mornings starting.
I do remember that.
I don't know if it was 4 weeks or 5 weeks or 3 weeks
like
or
that.
Something.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
Because I remember when you sort of were leaving, I guess maybe it was CBS radio, but when you were leaving sort of terrestrial, you went right into the podcast. Like,
yeah,
you were one of the first people that said, I'm done here, but I am now going to, on Monday, be right here doing the same thing, but in a completely different medium.
My thought on it at the time, since podcasting, it really, there was no business model or anything. I wasn't thinking about it. I had realized through being a real fan of radio and talk radio, and that I felt like I used talk radio as like my comfort animal, my support dog, you know, when I work construction. What I didn't know is that I was a talker and a listener, and I wanted to exchange ideas, and I'd get these lonely jobs where it's like they'd go, there's your scraper, there's the tile, go spend, and then the guy just like leave and just spend the whole day like scraping a tile floor. And I'd start kind of climbing the walls because I was like, I want to talk, I want to hear ideas, right. I want, you know. So I then start bringing a little AM radio and just listening to whoever would talk, just to like, you turn the radio on when you leave your dog in a cage or something.
Yeah.
So they think there's somebody, they keep them company. So, and I started to realize that as these people started leaving the air or retiring, or so once in a while someone would die or something, I felt a loss. Like, I felt like, oh, I'm going to miss my friend. Where's my friend? You know? And so my thought was...
My friend.
Hey, my friend, yeah, David Viscott, the psychologist on KBC who I'd listen to. I'd listen to Dr. Ruth. I'd listen to the Bible Answer Man. I'd listen to anybody who was on the radio. And so I just said to everyone on Friday, when I signed off, I said, you know, most of you are not going to hear me broadcast anymore. But for those of you who don't want to break this connection, and I feel... like it is a loss, and I've been on the losing end of that a few times. Like, for those of you who feel that way, you may hear me for an hour a day or whatever it is. I will still be there. You have to go to your computer, put it on your whatever. But I shall be there for those who want the sound of my voice.
In 2009, you would explain to people, like, how to,
right.
Here's how you find me.
Right. So that was really the lofty goal, that we just kept this connection for the small group that may want to go there with me.
But that is so fascinating to me, because it was both brilliant in terms of its prescience about the future of podcasting and of hearing radio from a different medium, but the impetus behind it was exactly what you just said, was this is because I felt lost when somebody doesn't do this, and so I don't want you guys to feel that, so I'll be here even if you're not, but for those of you that want to come. And that was a big part of leaving Silicon Valley, was I just felt like I was doing a season of television, and it was great, and people loved it, but what I felt a loss of was that live connection of doing stand-up, and the audience is right there. And what I talk about in my show now a lot is, you know, I wanted to do this. I had done a lot of great work on Silicon Valley, people say, and I was really lucky to work with Mike Judge and Clay Tarver and Jamie Babbitt, who I just did a movie with. And so, you know, I learned so much there, but I really, 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 really love being in front of an audience. And I say to them, I say, you know, we're sharing a singular experience. I will never perform this. No one else will ever see this exact show, and I will never perform for this exact audience. So this is a singular experience with just us. And I say, not with me, not with you guys, with us. And people really appreciate that, and it makes them think, yeah, live entertainment is better than sitting in front of a screen and binge watching, because streaming is kind of a drug. And people, and I think people binge watch something and they have a new feeling they never had, which is you finish binge watching something and you have this sense of accomplishment, but you also know that you've kind of wasted your life.
Yeah, and you're in withdrawals again.
Yeah, and so you kind of end it and you're like, ha ha! Ah, I could have learned another language, you know? And you do, you watch one episode and then another, and then another, and then another, and then you finish the season, you're upset for 7 months. Exactly. So I felt like streaming was headed in a direction where people were going to get screen fatigue, which I think they have a little bit, and podcasting has now exploded. And because, you know, people love radio. I think that it's the same reason you loved it. And I think stand-up and live entertainment in general, I know this, that music and comedy and all those things, that's all gone up. That's I'm seeing my numbers go up and up and up because I think people can feel that. They're like, I want to go see the thing.
Well, tell me how you would answer this question. So, you know.
Yes, it's a great hot sauce. It's reasonably priced.
I think you know, people say to me, oh, you do a podcast or you make a doc or you're in a doc or you write a book or you do a movie or something. What do you want to do? Like, first I was wondering, like, what do you really want to do? And I go, I just want to take my idea and I want to put it in your head. So I don't really care if it's on stage or through a microphone or in a documentary. I just want to take my idea and convey it to you.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you have a general feeling about that.
I heard that all the time. That's in every single interview that I do on radio all the time, morning television, whatever. It's, you know, you do film, you do television, you do voiceover and children's animation, and you do stand-up comedy. You know, which of those is your favorite? It's a very dumb question, and I would always answer, for me, it's all just different media. It's all comedy. It's all I care about is that I'm making you laugh in whatever medium that can reach you. That's great. A film's amazing because hundreds of millions of people see it. If I do a commercial and it's funny, then that's 30 seconds where you're laughing. If I do my podcast, Cashing In with TJ Miller, you know, that podcast we have, it's like sort of has a really strong cult following. So I like making you laugh. But that is actually something. So two things on that. I have found that my podcast, people are much, because I'm talking about me and my life and Kate and Cash Levy is talking about his wife and his kids, people really connect to that because they know you better. You've become their friend, right?
Right.
And so we say we have 12 and a half listeners, but the army of listeners call themselves the 12 and a half, and they'll show up to the shows, and they're really excited about it. And I think that I sort of do that or a version of that with stand-up. I'm there for an hour. I'm going to talk about me, but I'm going to talk about things that I think are funny. I'm going to juggle. I'm going to do terrible ventriloquism. I'm going to do all those things, but you're really going to get to know me more than when I play a character. So I have found that actually for me right now, stand-up is really interesting, and I think it's my favorite thing. But also remember, I was acting in Hollywood doing very little stand-up, as much as I could constantly. You know, I was doing acting for 10 years, and now finally I'm doing just stand-up. And I was doing stand-up during Silicon Valley. We would finish working. It was a 14-hour day. The other guys would go home. They'd get ready for the next day. They'd read the script for the table read. I would just go do stand-up. And I would do not one show, but I'd do two shows. So I'd be out until 1 in the morning doing shows and then come back and have a 5 a.m. call. So I was still really focused on the stand-up, but I wasn't able to give it as much attention as I can now. So now I'm seeing the level that I can take it to, because you tour for every weekend for a year, you really see a different kind of tightness to the stand-up. And so I like that. I also like that there's no one in between me and the audience. I can just, and I think that's the same here.
Yeah.
There's production. You guys produce the show, but you can say whatever the fuck you want.
Well,
you know, and that's the same with stand-up.
I feel like stand-up, it feels like everyone, like in a world of show business where you don't have a 401k or retirement plan or anything. It's not like you
or
talk
health
to
insurance.
It's crazy when you talk to firemen, you'll talk to guys. I'll talk to guys. They'll be 49 years old. Like, I think I'm retiring next year.
How?
If I retire this year, I'll only get 80% of my salary for the rest of my life. But if I wait 18 months, then I'll get full salary. And I'm like, you're a young, fit dude. Like, okay, but that's
25 years of
that's the deal you make in show business. And I think stand-up feels like a little retirement fund. It feels like you can't get Me Too'd, mm-hmm. you can't get cut, you can't get boycotted, you can't get thrown off the network, you can't get anything as long as you have that stand-up
base. If people like it and they're going to come out and buy tickets, then yeah, you can do it for the rest of your life. And we've seen so many people who have done that. And that's another thing that I think feels really good is when you're doing a film or television or an advertisement, you're an employee. That's not a bad thing. You have the responsibilities of an employee. You have a boss. So you can go home and be like, I had such a tough day. My boss is real. And you can live that life. But stand up, just like you said, it's your own business. You're the CEO. You're the accountant. You're you're in charge of IT. You're all of it. And if you can do that and people want to see it, yeah, it is. You know, I don't know retirement fund, but I think like it's almost a pension where you can count on it every weekend. And that's a nice thing, too. That changes your mentality, I think, in your life also.
Yeah.
The difference between being an employee and a boss.
I just heard Tim Allen just say, with stand up, it's the people, money, and me. That's it. That's all it is. All right, my movie, Shelby American, is out November 19th. That's Matt Damon's character in Ford v. Ferrari. DVD, Blu-ray, and digital. You can pre-order it at Chassis, chassy.com. So tons of stuff going on in that world. Let me hit Geico, and then we'll take a quick break. We'll do the news. TJ, going to hang out and do the news with
us? Absolutely. And I'm excited to see your documentary.
Well, there's a bunch, so I'll get them all to you. Geico, everyone's got the to-do list. How about you save money? I'd save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance. You don't have to go anywhere. Just go to geico.com. 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on your auto insurance. Take that extra money, put it in your pocket, or get some of TJ's hot sauce, man.
I'm still eating it. That's how much
delectable.
I like it.
Go to Geico.com, spend a couple minutes, and find out just how much you could be saving on your auto insurance at Geico.com. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back with the news right after this.
Get your tickets now for Adam Carolla is Unprepared for the Holidays. December 1st at the Belly Up in Solana Beach. December 7th at Virginia Street Brewhouse in Reno. December 13th and 14th in Oxnard at Levity Live. In Milwaukee at the Pabst Theater on January 24th. And at Chicago's Park West on January 25th. Adam Carolla is Unprepared for the Holidays. Get your tickets now at adamcarolla.com.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gina Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Deep news with Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, starting out with some really, really sad and dark news. Haven't heard this in actually a little while. As of this afternoon, Thursday, so far two people reported killed and several others injured during a shooting at a Southern California high school. And the student gunman apparently in custody. Now we're hearing, you know, self-inflicted brain, you know, gunshot wound, brain damage, grave, you know, critical, whatever. The shooting occurred around 7:30 at Saugus High School in the city of Santa Clarita, not actually too far from where we do the show here. Henry Mayo Newhall Hospital tweeted that one female patient is dead. Two males were in critical and one male in good condition. But on the way over here, I heard two people have died. Los Angeles County Sheriff Alex Villanueva, he tweeted that the suspect was in custody and was being treated at the hospital. He said the suspect was a student, but gave no other information. However, also on the way here, reported that it was maybe his 16th birthday, Asian male, went to school, dark clothes.
I keep hearing it's, you know, they're making a big deal over his 16th birthday.
Yeah, I just like, heard that.
Yeah, that's what I kept hearing, too. But I'm just like, oh, so what? Why does that factor into this?
And on his Instagram bio, I guess it was like, have fun at school today, Saugus High School. So, who knows?
Also, if you are a mass shooter and then you attempt to kill yourself with a pistol and you're clinging to life, I say we just put a glad bag over your head.
I mean, what you meant to do.
Yeah, this is your wishes are being
right,
honored.
That was
and then
how you wanted this then.
What are you going to do? By the way, I mean, this guy's in California. He's not going to be put to death. We're going to spend several million bucks putting him back together. Mm-hmm. Right. And then he's going to cost us because he's going to be in maximum. You know, whatever. lockdown for. It's going to cost us $65K a year. Far as I can tell, people live longer in prison than they do outside of prison, because outside of prison, they smoke and they drink and they get into car accidents and shit. Yeah. In the joint,
they're working out.
The guys are in like solitary. I mean, those guys go on into
their three square meals a day. Right.
This guy's going well into his 80s. I mean, in terms of paying for this guy, if he makes it through the super expensive surgery he's involved with right now, it's going to be $65K for the next 70 years. Yep. Like, spread that out.
Well, I think that, you know, obviously not a lot of funny stuff about this, but in the sense of I kind of maybe the parents want justice to be served type of thing, but is it not justice to sort of take him off life support? I'm not sure. The weird thing for me today was I was supposed to do Good Day LA this morning, and they said, you know, breaking news is that, and they were obviously going to do that coverage, and they said, stick around, you know, we'll see if we can fit you in, and I talked to Kate, and she was like, don't stick around. It doesn't work to go, I'm at Brea this weekend, you guys, I know this is tough, but we need to laugh, you know?
Right.
But I think that was a weird thing for me, where I sort of realized there is no antidote for the way that the media, you know, covers this stuff. They want you to be glued, and they want to give you as much information as possible, but I saw them finding people that were crying. Mm-hmm. I saw them go up to one person and then see somebody who's crying and then go over there and say, how did you feel when that was happening? Did you ever think this was going to happen? They're sort of asking the same questions, but trying to find the most, you know, the saddest people, the people that were the most tragic stories. And so that's, with me, I'm like, how do you cover this in a way that's respectful, but also gives everybody the information? That's a really tough line to walk.
I don't know if you guys are all like me, but I don't hang on the news on these stories. I assume people were shot, a couple died, a couple were injured. It's all wildly tragic. And I don't need to know the part about the one young kid who was getting ready to graduate later that whatever, or just made Eagle Scout. You know, it's just more salt on the wound that never scabs over.
I left and didn't. I was not checking in about it or whatever. I have a friend, Megan O, who will get sort of sucked into that whole thing. But I think that's the idea of what the media is doing, is trying to just keep you watching. And I don't hang on it because they were doing interviews, which was sort of like, what did you do? What were you thinking when you did that? And they said, well, we locked the doors to the classroom. And they said, what happened then? Other kids were banging on the door to try and come into the classroom, and we didn't let them in. And I'm like, whoa, this is, now you're sort of putting people in weird moral compass positions.
Like Hunger Games.
Yeah, and you're also just saying, now people are watching going, well, why didn't you let the other kids in? And then somebody else says, well, what if one of them was the shooter? It gets to be too much. I like better your idea, which is, this is a tragedy. I'll hear about how many people died, but why does that make it any better? Or the people that live, it's just,
I think there's a lot more,
it's a tough one,
Schadenfreude going on in our society these days.
Oh, yeah, social media?
We used to kind of do that thing where I was kind of, you know, it's sort of like your fiancé would dump you, and then you'd find out that they remarried, you know, 9 months later. And back in the day, you'd have to be sort of stoic about it. Right. Like, you go, well, I wish Jenny good luck in her new relationship. Yeah. Now you're like, fuck that douche, fuck cunt, douche dude. That guy's a piece of fucking shit, man. She fuck herself. You know what? Her pussy stinks. Like that's where we're at now. And it's like, you shouldn't be. There's this Schadenfreude thing that I think is pretty ubiquitous. Like you love hearing about, like, oh, they found a picture of this guy in blackface from 1981, you know, or they found this, or they, this person tattled on that person.
Everybody can hide behind that computer, and they never have to interact with the actual person.
And the shooting, like the school shooting thing, is another kind of a, like, well, I wasn't there, or my kid wasn't there. A good thing my kid wasn't there. It's kind of what you do with plane crashes and stuff, like, oh, I fly, but I wasn't on that plane.
But it
shouldn't feel that interesting or compelling. It shouldn't, like, suck you in. It should be, I feel bad for everyone involved, and then fill me in on all the details. when you get all the details in 4 days, not every 5 minutes.
Well, when you talk about Schadenfreude, and not to shit on your point, but just to sort of sway it a little bit, this feels more like as a the other side of that coin. Instead of Schadenfreude, it's the Dateline A Mother's Nightmare, because it's not that, oh, this didn't happen to me. It's this could happen to me.
No, I agree. It's all living through kind of the potential of other people's good and bad. Like, God, I'm glad I wasn't there. Or, ooh, I'm glad that wasn't my yearbook that those guys opened and found that old picture of me in, and blah, blah, blah.
Well, and to your point, Gene, is that there's a very, a couple of the interviews they did were just over and over, did you ever think this would happen to you?
Right.
Did you ever think this could happen in Santa Clarita?
Yeah.
It's one of the safest places. We're in California. And so what they're doing is exactly what you said. They're saying, like Dateline, I mean, Santa Clarita, who could have thought, I guess this can happen anywhere. Mm-hmm. I don't know that you need that information. If you look at the statistics, it's same as a plane crash. It's not going to happen to your kid. They do the drills. They do the best that they can do. Hopefully some of these people are getting mental health. But it's because of social media, and because it's not just Good Day LA that's covering it, it's 1,000 websites that are getting every – it's cut-and-paste journalism, and everything is true if they just say it. And it, so it becomes this, like, huge machine that if you even tap in a little bit, you're in the matrix.
That's right.
You know?
Right.
And if you even start to get alerts – then you just start going into the rabbit hole, and that is not healthy for people.
Yeah, people were calling in, listening in.
It's not healthy for culture.
No, they were calling into the radio, listening on their own police scanner. Mm-hmm. So it's like everyone's been deputized a reporter, because that's not necessarily accurate information that they're dispensing.
Yeah, I don't know what to do other than my same answer, which is everyone needs to hit the trail or go to the garage and start putting some wood together, man. Like, you got to get out, you got to shut it off, and you got to get tactile, and you got to put something together.
That's another point that I make in, in my shows, is that social media, I think in a couple of years, we'll look back at it like we look at cigarettes now. You know, if you see somebody on Snapchat indoors, you're going to be like, take that shit outside. Keep it 15 feet away from the entrance.
Right.
Babies around. Kids. Secondhand Snapchatting kills.
Don't get kids hooked.
Right. Yeah, and so it's so unhealthy, but for a moment we thought it connected people or it was healthy, and now it so obviously isn't, but now we're hooked. Now we've gotten to the point where we're 2 packs a day, and the best we can do is say, let's bring it down to 1 pack. Mm. And what you're talking about a little bit is like, quit cold turkey, or at least take time off, because it's just not going to help you. It's not going to...
I think the Snapchat or whatever, what tweets or whatever, this notion of like Facebook, whatever, there was this proclamation that's going to bring us together.
Yeah.
And it reminds me, the last sort of technological revolution, so to speak, would be like, when stuff started getting automated, like dishwashers, washing machines, heating and air and all this stuff. And every advertisement in the 50s for a woman with a washing machine was the woman lounging, like reading a periodical mm-hmm. while the washing machine was doing the work. But in reality, all the computer and the washing machine, all it's done is free us up to work more.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this promise of we'll have leisure time because
like
the computer will take care of all our work so mm-hmm. fast. No, it just means you're working weekends and on an airplane now.
Right.
So,
or on social media.
Right. So
the computer has become work.
And the dishwasher, you have to wash. Sometimes you have to wash the dishes before you put them in the dishwasher. That is creating more work.
Don't get me started. I've had this argument very many times. My wife, who claims... Also, by the way, who are the chick friends who just agree with the nonsense that comes out of the wife's mouth? Mm. Like, I go, just you have them at the sink, you got the hot water going, you got the sponge out, why are you loading them into the dishwasher?
Finish
and then they
up.
Go, you know, they have that weird smell after it dries, and then the friend goes, oh, yeah, no, and
like,
I'm yelling,
dishwashing
no, what weird
soap?
Smell? No, what
because
weird
it's her
smell?
Friend, like, not your friend.
When people...
Buy different soap.
When people clean out of my house, when they clear out, and I'm home alone for 4 days, it's like one plate, rinse it, dry. So like every time. Never fire up the whatever.
I never put anything in the dishwasher. Kate's always putting, she's finishing cleaning it. She wants to get in there. So it's hygienic. I'm like, that's, and it's funny because you say, do something tactile. I like doing the dishes because you get them done, you dry them, and then you're done. You did it yourself.
Mm-hmm. It's done.
You use the machine.
It's done. And your argument, the argument is like, I want them clean. And it's like, that's what we're doing.
You're
and
in
it's
the middle
dry
of cleaning them.
And it's fine. But what I'm saying is the promise of all this technology in the 50s and the 60s was to free us up for leisure time. We can write poetry now. All it's done is make everyone work more. And the promise of all the social media was it's going to bring us together, and it's just tearing us apart.
Yep. Well, you're absolutely right. Even with the 50s and 60s, to afford the new dishwasher that your neighbor has, you do have to work on the weekends to get the better microwave that heats it faster. You need to have more time to work from home because now you have a laptop or what. And then just like how microwaves now, we go, this may give you cancer. It's using radiation. We don't even have a microwave. I think hopefully soon people realize that social media and even further than that, cut and paste journalism is like really, really damaging. And the best thing you can do is exactly what you said. It's just like back away from it. Just say,
well, you know, that feeling of being out of touch for 3 days, like, you know, that feeling of
hilarious.
Go to Maui or I go on the road and
you
we're just traveling
every day,
just traveling or be around. And then you realize 3 days has gone by. You have no idea what's going on. Like, where are we? What's the latest Trump news? I haven't heard anything.
You're
I've been traveling and performing or whatever. There's a very it's that feeling of when you step out of a sauna or a hot tub or something that's kind of like,
you
don't even know it. But I think so many people are self-agitating. Like they're literally flicking their own tooth that hurts in their gums, you know, and they just keep flicking it with their tongue. And it's like, why are you self-agitating? Why not?
Self-flagellating. Some of them are like, I should have known this. I mean, friend is talking about this. That's why I love it. I felt very fortunate that Kate brought me to France to be in Avignon, which is the south of France, because there was none of it. They would do on you would see on the front page of the newspaper, you'd see a distilled version by real journalists of what was going on with Trump if you wanted to pick that up. But I would walk by people, and they were either on Instagram or putting things on Instagram, which I think is the least evil, although you're still scrolling going, that looks like a lunch I wish I had had. That looks like a love that I would cherish. That looks like a vacation I'll never take. But in France, they weren't wrapped up in the thing. It was more about being at the cafe, meeting with your friends. People were always texting.
They were violently tweeting.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think that they're connected to it in the way that the United States is. And that kind of bums me out because I did feel that when I was in Europe, and then when I came back, it was almost like an onslaught of, you know, it's like when you make the decision to stop getting Google alerts for your own name, you know? You just, you stop wanting to know what the internet has to say. You stop getting those Apple News drop-downs. You say, I'm turning off notifications for news. It frees you up. And I think hopefully not to do more work.
I always say all roads lead to narcissism, and I think this is tapped into a kind of a narcissism that we all carry within us but never really explored or exported in the past. Now you can weigh in on everything or find out what people thought of how you weighed in. You know, there was just a time and I think we all have that feeling of like somebody was talking about you on the schoolyard. What did they say? You know, we're all wired that way, but there was just no, when I used to work construction and I didn't have a phone or anything, it was like, what was I doing? I just leave the house in the morning and go work all day and then come home and watch SportsCenter Sunday night or Sports Machine, George Michael.
Yeah. That's like when you think about like, kids who grew up in the 80s or the 70s or whatever, if they got bullied at school, school would be over. School would be over by 3 o'clock, and then they go home, and then they play with their stuff or they watch TV. Now that shit follows you home. It follows you to your own.
Yeah, that's
shows
exactly
up.
Right.
It shows up in your feed.
Just be, right. It used to just be in the schoolyard. You can go, well, at least at three, I don't have. Now people are obsessively checking, like, yeah, what did Becky say about me and John broke up with her? So is it possible? And here are pictures of it.
Yeah.
And here's an ugly picture I saw of her, and I'm posting on my Instagram because she was being a bitch to me yesterday. All that stuff is so unhealthy. And you're so right. It follows you. It just, it keeps.
But there is a remedy. There is a remedy, which is you can just go enjoy a hot dog without taking a tour of the slaughterhouse and figuring out how the meat was processed and everything.
Like,
or don't pouring over the Yelp reviews.
Yeah. Stop other pouring people over lying. All your own stuff. Just go out and enjoy. All right, go ahead, Gina.
I'm sorry. It just reminded me when we were talking about the beginning of this story. I was up for a really big job. It was like 2012, a radio job. And my agent called a million times and said, no matter what, this is mornings. You got to be perky. You got to be happy. The first person you see at the receptionist desk, you are on fire. You are happy. You are up. And I said, sounds great. And I prepared. And I was great. I was so excited. And I walked in and people are sort of scrambling around. And this is a top 40 station. And I'm like, the vibe is weird, but that's okay. I'm Gina. It's so nice to meet you. And they're all looking at me like I'm an asshole. I met with the VP of programming, and I'm shaking his hand, and I'm smiling, and I can't
figure
out.
Around, but she's young and clean.
That's right. And he goes, you didn't hear the news? I was like, no, I didn't hear the news. I'm to the news. I'm so happy to meet you. Sandy Hook had just happened 10 minutes before I walked in the door, and I didn't know that because I was preparing to be bubbly.
Perky, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so Lori Loughlin got a better picture this week of what she may face if found guilty. So the 13th parent in the Varsity Blues college admission scandal was sentenced to 6 months in federal prison, and this is what it has to do with Lori. So his name is Toby McFarlane. He paid around the same amount of money she did, and for USC, and that's the same college, of course, that her daughters, got in as superior athletes in rowing. Toby lied about his daughter about being a star soccer player, claimed his son was a basketball recruit. He's 5'5", by the way. And in addition to prison time...
The son is or he is?
The son.
Point guard.
The judge in Boston.
Spud. Right,
Spud Webb.
Spud McFarlane. He has to pay $150,000, perform 200 hours of community service, 2 years supervision after the release of 6 months in jail, and because... these were very, very parallel paths. Now that's probably what she's looking at.
So they have comps, basically.
Yes.
Precedent,
yes.
as they say.
Now she has a specific comp.
Well, tell me when she goes in so I can sleep with the front door unlocked that night.
I know. She's terrorizing the community.
Go ahead and take long walks in the park at night, not have to look over my shoulder anymore because she's incarcerated.
That's right.
It's kind of two-whit that, like, people are following that, and that's the schadenfreude.
Again,
because in that one, it's not a... It could have been me that bribed somebody to get my kid into college. There's none of that.
No, I couldn't afford it to be me.
Your feelings about her should be so what? Not like I have really strong feelings about justice.
Suddenly.
Who cares? God. And then also it's the kind of thing where I have a lot of sympathy for people that I do feel like get sucked into stuff. Like I felt like I hate it when they go like, well, you know, it wasn't Clinton in the Whitewater thing. It's that he lied about Monica Lewinsky. Like, okay, his wife was sitting next to him and you're asking him if he was banging an intern. Like, of course he's going to lie.
What
like,
would you
I
do?
Feel bad for the people that get sucked into something. I don't know that she gets sucked, but most affluent parents, if somebody came to them, like it's like a tax thing.
I'm sure she heard about it from a girlfriend. You know,
it's like Martha Stewart. You know what I mean? Like if I owned 70 million shares of Upjohn and I was getting onto a private jet and someone goes, you know, they test a new drug. It just failed the EPA test or whatever test and they're not going to approve it. And I'd go, okay, well, dump that stock, man. Like I do it too.
Send her a muffin basket.
And why do we know? Because people do that. That her daughter was like trying to be a YouTube star and was saying, "I don't even care about college. I don't even want to go to college." Why do I know that?
Yeah.
Why does that need to be part of the information that we all have? And that's sort of the ill that we're talking about,
right?
Because none of us were following her on Instagram, but we know it too.
Yeah, now we know it.
Yeah.
So I was making an observation about what TJ was saying earlier about the news. It was very insightful. They keep you watching, keep you watching, keep you watching. Yeah. I heard, I don't remember where it was or who it was, but it was such a crazy idea that I was like, that's insane. That's a great idea. It'll never happen. Someone was like, what really should happen is if you are a news organization, NBC News, CNN, Fox News, whoever, you shouldn't be allowed to make money. You should not be allowed to take advertisers. Just give the news. Think about how the news would change if they weren't taking, if they didn't, you know, weren't trying to keep the viewers watching for advertisers. Like if it was just a news service, you know
PBS.
What I mean?
Yeah.
Like, think how the news would change in our relationship with information. It'll never ever happen, but it's a great idea.
Yeah. It's an interesting.
It did in China, and that worked out perfectly.
Government run, yeah.
I think everyone's opinions would still take over. And
they'd still be there, of course.
Skew it, but I agree. It'd be interesting.
It's like take the face masks away to get rid of CTE, you know, head trauma. It's like, like football. It's like, that'll never happen. It's a good idea, but it'll never happen.
Yeah, agree. Mm-hmm. All right, let me hit Castrol Edge. Stronger under pressure. Engines can lose up to 10% of performance due to friction. Castrol Edge with fluid titanium transforms under pressure. It is three times.
Ha-ha!
Stronger than leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown. It's the edge. It's formulated in ways to exceed the toughest industry standards. It is Castrol Edge. All right, one more, Gina Grad, because TJ's got a hard out.
All right. Well, it's not exactly as bad as Lori Loughlin, because she's obviously the worst. But amid a new rape accusation against Roman Polanski, protesters shut down the premiere of the director's latest film. According to Deadline, 40 people, quote, blocked the entrance to a premiere of An Officer and a Spy on Tuesday night in Paris, ultimately resulting in the screening getting canceled.
There's new allegations from 1977 allegations now?
No. Recently, Polanski was accused by a French photographer, Valentin Monnier, of raping her in 1975. He's denied the allegations. The Oscar winner has been living in France since fleeing the U.S. in 78 after pleading guilty to having sex with a 13-year-old girl.
Who later would say, please stop doing this to me. Please, please,
I'm trying to get on with my life.
I'm trying to get on with my life. Yeah, people can say anything, and then suddenly your premiere is getting blocked. And I saw posters for that. That was going to be a big movie in France. You know?
Max Zapata, tell me if I'm right. I'm interested in the guys. I think he was going back door during the jacuzzi rape.
Oh, man.
I think so. Yeah, look
Dude,
that
that's
up.
Not funny.
Look
Come
that
on.
Up.
Young girl's victimized.
I'm just saying, once in a while, there's a dude who rapes, and he goes, oh, and by the way, I'm going in the keister, and it's like, boy, you have high self-esteem. I can't even rape. I have that low self-esteem. I don't want to impose myself, but you're going for the whole enchilada here, aren't you, Bucko?
I've been with my wife since college, and never has that come up in conversation where she's like, oh, yeah, sure, I think that'd be great.
It may have been Roman's idea.
Was it the 13-year-old's idea?
Possibly. It was a different time.
Right.
We can't judge, but was that part of the allegation?
I'm not ruling out it was Bob Evans' idea.
Yeah, I'm seeing rape, sodomy, and oral.
Oy.
Wow, the trifecta.
Jesus Christ. Now, it is a little it's a little slippery with the sodomy, as I've always said.
Depending on where you are.
Like my grandpa used to say. Well, it's on my license plate frame now. Slippery with the sodomy, which is because sodomy kind of can mean a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm.
Depending on the law, yeah. Mm.
But if you say oral and rape and sodomy, normally...
You know what you're talking about.
There.
It's pretty strange that it's another allegation from that time.
Yeah.
And again, no evidence or anything, just straight up like, yeah, he did this, and then now all again, the machine starts to destroy him.
At this point, I mean, I would imagine the statute in France is the same, so it's just the court of public opinion, and they can keep the machine going.
I have a kind of a cosmic thing with him, and it's sort of the same cosmic thing I have with Bill Cosby, which is, you know, Bill Cosby had his son Ennis just snuffed out by the side of the road. Like
he didn't have him snuffed out.
It happened to him. You know, his son was just shot, executed by some like Russian thuggy kitty gangbanger, whatever. Just happenstance, no rhyme, no reason. And that's super tragic if you're Bill Cosby, anybody, to have your son just executed by gun at the side of the road for no reason. And, you know, Roman Polanski obviously came home or found out that his wife, his pregnant wife with his son or daughter in it, it was just executed for no reason and the most gory whatever. I don't know. I feel like they're both cosmically paid back, right? Like there is no – how are you really going to punish him? You know what I mean? Like what – considering what they've been through, like what they've done. Like, I feel – in a way, like, I hate it when a guy...
The universe has caused them more pain than any jury could inflict.
Yeah, the idea is somebody takes a life, we need an eye for an eye, or we need to punish that person. It's not, we don't need money from them, it's a punitive thing. Like, they need to be punished. Having your son executed is a sort of permanent punishment, and having your wife slaughtered is pretty much
and I think a lot of people didn't know that until Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and they started sort of recounting that story and how that's terrifying. Yeah, they cut her open and killed her kid, and you know, that's
all right. Not defending the lads, but I'm saying cosmically punished. Yeah. All right, let's see.
That's a good bookend of sadness.
TJ, yeah. Hey, Bray Improv, I better coming up tonight, man.
That's the name of the next tour. Bookend of sadness.
Yeah, right.
You're sitting home, you're thinking about infants being slaughtered while inside the womb, or Russians taking out comedian school teachers' sons, as comedian sons or school teachers by the side of the road. Why don't you head out tonight and paint a smile on your face? Turn that frown upside down. Tonight, through Sunday, the Brea Improv, TJ Miller.
Guaranteed to make you stop feeling terrible.
That's
really
right.
And that's the reason I'm doing it, especially in these very, very harsh times.
And the movie Underwater, that's in theaters January 10th as well. And the podcast, Cashing In with TJ Miller. Listen on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, be a part of the 12 and a half.
If you'd like, go to adamcarolla.com. I got live shows coming up all over the place as well. And go to Chassis, because we got a whole bunch of movies coming out as well. And until next time, this is Adam Carolla for TJ Miller. And Mark Garagos and Gina Grandball Bryan. Say it. Mahalo. It's the people, money, and me.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow the Ace Man on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 for tickets and info on all the live podcasts, the Mangry events, the books, the movies, and more. Visit adamcarolla.com.